Hey, Jamie.
Welcome back, Keith.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, I looked to see when our previous season was, and apparently season 2, episode 11 was in July of last year. So we took a quite extended hiatus.
Dang, that is. Yeah, I think we talked about coming back in October.
Something like that.
Yeah, and life kind of got in the way a little bit on both our ends. What's been going on with you in the non-chronic world?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess since the last time we recorded a podcast, my wife and I, well, she is pregnant and we're going to have a baby, which we found out sometime in July of last year. So yeah, it would have been literally after we had recorded that episode, I think. And yeah, so it's just been a lot of prep stuff for that. And
first season with a baby.
Yes. First. Well, she's not here yet, but she will be here any week at this point. So it's going to be a little bit weird. This is an odd time to start a podcast when I'm going to be like, oh, dude, I'm too tired to do this. I can't podcast right now. But yeah, it's been going. And we also moved into our house. So we built a house last year. We moved into that house in July. So a lot of things have changed for me outside of this, you know, just chronic stuff in the last few months. So it's been a big change for us. And then still working at Linux Academy, creating cool courses on things. Been doing a lot of Python recently, and then did some Go prior to that, and have been working with a lot of Ruby stuff also in the last 8 or 9 months. So it's been good.
Well, congrats on all the life stuff, man.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very excited, and it's a little bit scary, but yeah, spent most of yesterday putting together a crib and other things for the baby's room, and now we're just really getting things around.
You're about to have a lot less time, my friend.
Yeah, I know. That's that's what I hear from everybody. Thankfully, this is one of the like really great perks I have working at Linux Academy, is that I have 8 weeks of paternity leave. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, when she's born, I actually get to take a couple months and not have to try to juggle the full-time job and being supportive to my wife and just getting to spend time with my daughter. So
I've never had paternity leave and never will, actually.
Yeah, that's the burden of, you know, owning your own business and being a consultant.
Well, yeah, and not giving yourself that more than 3 days off, but also having a wonderful wife that can deal with all that.
Yeah. Yeah. Kendra gets 16 weeks of maternity leave.
That's awesome. That's
like, it's crazy. She gets so much time off. I mean, yeah, in the US, that's like a staggering amount. And then you see some other countries and there'd just be like far, far more time involved. Like, I think some European countries, you basically just get to take a year off when you have a child.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to like find like, you know, places to watch your kid that A, you trust. I mean, you have like a brand new 4-month-old kid, you know, in most cases it's 2 months old, you know?
Yeah.
And so like trying to find a place that you trust that will take children that young, because they're a lot of work. So like a lot of places like have a lot of other kids around and babies. So it's tough, man. So the more you can get off, the easier that is.
Yeah. So we're pretty jazzed. How have things been going outside of chronic for you?
Good. Kind of crazy. I think last time we talked, I was starting like a secret project I couldn't talk about.
Yes, I believe so. And then we never exposed it.
Yeah, it was. So I started a software, like a true agency, like three other of my friends. Because we've all been doing this kind of single entrepreneur.
Solopreneur is the word.
Sorry, this is first time solopreneur. No. So we've all been doing this solopreneur type stuff. And I was like, you know, we should just all join forces. And that took a long time to like make sure we wanted to do it and kind of what we believed in, make sure all our ducks were in a row. And we started doing that and we did it for six or so months together. And various things happened. In terms of financial area stuff, and I had to leave just due to the fact I couldn't really weather the storm as long as they have. And that just happened recently. So I'm kind of back with being Running Fantastic as a side gig for now. It's kind of my jobby job.
Yeah, I was like, it's your main gig. I don't know what you're talking about.
Sorry, it's my main gig, my jobby job. And I've got kind of like a renewed energy around it. I'm kind of pretty jazzed. I've got a lot of ideas that I'm actually going to implement so that I don't always have to be billable, and I can focus time, a lot more time on chronic. So right now I've set it up so that I have 3 weeks with a client and then 1 week off. I actually have 4 days a week. So I usually take Fridays off to work on the business, whatever that business is. Mm-hmm. So that's how I have it set up. So I have 4 days on for 3 weeks and then the whole week off where I plan to work on chronic throughout that whole week. So pretty excited about that. I also have some brilliant, fantastic other things I'm going to do, such as training and
nice.
I'm going to start a clothing line as well.
So, I haven't heard that one before, but you know.
It's something I've always wanted to do. And I've kind of dabbled in it a bit. You know, I used to be a screen printer back in the day.
Oh, I do remember you telling me about this. Like in college, you did screen printing, right?
College and high school, and I just loved it. And I have an obsession with t-shirts and hats. So,
truth.
Yeah, truth. So, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm just kind of really jazzed and really pumped about it. I'm working on a new site right now using Gatsby. So that's been fun. So I'm going to have a blog post about kind of what happened with Kinship. Kinship is still around. I just had to leave just due to financial issues. So it's a lot. I give props, man, to like these agencies. It's really, really hard. You know, agencies that I've worked with in the past, like really closely, like Test Double and Headway and One Design, like these people have figured it out and figured out. I'm sure if you ask them, they haven't figured everything out, but they've figured out the basics, and the basics are really, really hard.
Yeah. They have a good working model that has probably been a little bit difficult to get to. I'm sure I'm sure none of them got there without some amount of struggles.
Sure.
But yeah, once just seeing it in action, you're like, this is pretty cool. The fact that this works at all. But I think that's how business is in general. You're just like, the fact that the lights are on right now is kind of amazing.
Right.
And there's something about doing it by yourself that I think makes it a little different in a sense, right? Because there's if you think you need to make more money kind of thing, you can always inevitably just put in more hours. Like it's sort of that there's that weird sort of thing, like the give and take, you can just screw your work life balance for a little bit, but it gets different when there's that whole other people depending on certain actions that you're taking and going from there.
Yeah. I'm really good at that. Like I've been doing that for like, I don't know, 13 years now, 12 years. And I've like never had not had client a time when I didn't have client work that I didn't need or want. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, and I have repeatable clients. It's kind of funny. I have went through kind of two stints of this and kind of given up my whole clientele to some other company. And now I'm like rebuilding it. Like this is like my third time rebuilding it. So
yeah, that's not the general tactic.
Right. And I've been able to do so like in a week. So it was kind of like, it's just made me more passionate about doing it again. And I'm going to have a blog post about, I'm still kind of trying to figure out exactly what went wrong. I do know kind of three little areas where we kind of screwed up. But I'll have a blog post about that.
Okay. Yeah. I think people would probably enjoy a little bit of a postmortem because, I mean, we like to talk about technical stuff a lot because we're both technical nerds, but at the end of the day, a lot of this technical stuff really wouldn't be very important if it didn't provide us a way to provide for our families. So the business side is something that's pretty interesting to listen to.
Yeah.
At least for me.
And I want to start talking about like failures I've had, and this is up there with one of my big failures I've had. So I'll be open and honest about it. So hopefully people can learn from it.
We haven't really scripted out what we're going to talk about, but I love the idea of talking about failures as a thing because in the various jobs I've worked in, that was one area that I fail a lot. Like I'm pretty open about the fact that like I make mistakes all the time and I just own it and I learn from it. And that, I mean, that's how you get better. You know, nobody is ever like perfect at everything that they do the first time around. It's like, no, you have to suck at it so that you can learn to suck less every day and then eventually be halfway decent at something. And a lot of people are really scared of that as a thing. Like I distinctly remember when I was starting at Squaremouth, we were doing our stand-up one day, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to spend some time today working with the ops guys because I suck at chef and I don't understand how that stuff works. So I want to figure that out so I don't screw anything up. And one of the guys sent me a message that was basically like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I can't believe that you admitted that you didn't know something in stand-up. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, it's going to look real stupid if I show you that I don't know something later on and when you thought I did. So I might as well admit it and go from there.
Yeah, that's kind of a sign of not the best culture, but yeah.
Yeah, well, that wasn't a culture thing. That was just a person thing. Like, it's, okay. You know, that was just, well, just a lot surprising. Of people are afraid, right? Like,
yeah, I don't, I get it. I mean, I'm afraid too, but, you know. At some point, I think when you get older and stuff like that, it's just run out of fucks to give. And as long as you keep going, and
I'm going to have to go find the bell again.
Oh, sorry about that.
I'm going to go find the buzzer. Ducks. Ran out of ducks to give.
That's right. Yeah. That's kind of what I've been up to, is a lot of trying to build an agency and failing at that, me personally, and kind of building back that up and kind of learning from what I learned from, and make sure that, cause that was a very stressful period as well. Just I was working my ass off trying to build something, around that. Also working on Chronic and trying not to let it, affect the work that I do on Chronic. And so that was a lot of hard work, but, I kind of set myself up for the next, few months anyway, of kind of getting a lot of work, being able to do a lot of work on Chronic.
Nice.
Which kind of brings us to where we are with Chronic.
Yeah.
So we've kind of come up with like four kind of milestones, which are just, you know, like basic. We have like an internal release we're trying to get to where like you and I can use the product. Mm-hmm. We both use Pomodoro's techniques during our day work.
Ish. I haven't actively used Pomodoro's in a long time because there's never been the app that scratched Chronic's itch. I did used to have this like Rube Goldberg machine that would basically do the same thing, but it was very convoluted and broke every time I would change one little thing. So,
yeah. And I am the same way. I'll start my day off, and then somewhere along the lines, it goes downhill, and I'm kind of bringing those lessons into future Chronic features. But, we kind of have a goal of being able to use the application, whether it's, you know, right now we have a Mac app, a web app, and an iOS app. Yep. Technically, we have an Android app too, but we haven't really paid attention to the Android
side. Have we ever run it on Android? No.
I have not. I don't even have the Android simulator, one of those two, whatever
it's
it is.
It's an emulator, I think.
Right, the emulator on my, I don't even have it installed, so. But we are planning on releasing to that. We just haven't. It's lower on our priority list. So that's kind of the internal release. Then we have like an idea of an alpha release where we can share it with people, family and friends type of thing, where we can get pretty good feedback. They will give that to us type of people. And then we kind of want to open it wider and wider to other people in the beta release and then our final release. So we wanted to start the season off when we got the internal release done. And I think we're about there.
I think we're pretty close. The main thing we're missing from an internal release, I think, is notifications.
Well, I was thinking notifications would be in the alpha release.
Oh, okay. Well, then we're pretty good. I actually just need to unbreak our continuous deployment after I switched our code hosting over. And then the servers would deploy properly, which shouldn't take me too incredibly long, says every engineer ever.
Yeah. And we have to build I have to build an iOS release. So that's kind of the last thing. It's kind of a continuous deployment type of deal where we can easily cut releases on all these systems, which will help us kind of in our alpha release. So.
Yeah, that'll be pretty nice. I'm considering building a homebrew tap for the Mac app. Too. I told you about this, but
but I love that.
We had continuous deployment for an internal Mac app that me and another one of the guys at Squaremouth had built, and we used a homebrew tap to like let people distribute it. It was so that you could get push notifications when your Jenkins jobs passed, which was kind of cool.
Yes.
Used pusher behind the scenes. It was pretty neat. But yeah, so we did that, and I was like, man, this is really slick, but I have to figure out how to do that when I don't have a Mac Pro to just randomly run things on in the sky. So that's that's something I'm going to have to look into. But
yeah, that would be cool. That'd be cool. I think those are easier to do than, you know, the whole like email or update through the app.
Yeah, well, I'm still going to do the update through the app thing. Like, I want the app to be able to automatically update, because not everybody uses Homebrew, right? Like,
right.
If we want to get the most traction out of this thing, then I'm going to need to have it sandboxed so that it can run in the Mac App Store, and then I'll do our own distribution channel, I'm sure, and package an auto-updater into that, too.
Yeah. And for the so we're using Swift for the Mac side and Xcode and all that. And then for the iOS, we're actually using Expo and React Native. Mm-hmm. And we have kind of a single app for both the web app and for the iOS app. Using React Native Web and React Native, we just have to deploy the Expo app. Right now, it's still contained within Expo. I think at some point it will probably get ejected from Expo as we kind of try to integrate with more advanced features of iOS that we have plans for, especially around integrations and stuff. I don't know. Maybe it will, but the distribution with Expo is pretty easy. So it should only take a couple hours, says every engineer ever.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, because as it works right now, kind of we've siloed the work in such a way. Like, I've dabbled with building Mac apps for like a decade now, it seems like. And so I'm always screwing around in these things. So I just dove in and decided I wanted to work on the Mac app. And then since I've been doing that and needing to more or less relearn everything about it, because we didn't want to use Electron. So since we're not using Electron, I had to learn everything about doing Mac app development again. So I've been kind of just burying myself in there and then coming out for air occasionally to work on the server. But, and you've been handling all of the web and the mobile version. So it'll be kind of nice to be able to take a breather for a minute and be like, okay, here's where we're at. Let's reprioritize some features and maybe try to unify our design across the two applications so we don't feel like we're so separate.
Yeah. So I think that's for the alpha release is kind of two major things. Is design, UI design, getting our like look and feel. We have somebody working on a logo. We have kind of drawings of kind of sketches of what we want certain areas of application to be like. And I'm taking those and I'm putting those in Sketch and coming up with various different designs. And then this design kind of includes a unique take on progress of a Pomodoro. And we can get into that later. But then that, the UI stuff, kind of merging that to make it more cohesive throughout all the applications. And then I think notifications. And notifications, I think, are going to be a little, we want them to be smart. We don't want them to just woof all of our devices when stuff happens.
Yeah, so nobody wants a woof.
Yeah, right. So I'm kind of referring them as smart notifications so that we can get notifications when you get a break or when you have to go back to work, and making sure you're getting those on the right devices at the right time.
Yep, which will be interesting once we kind of dive into determining how smart we need to make those, or what's the best like metric for that to be intelligent. Because I think inevitably we're still going to get it wrong some percentage of the time based on the metrics that we have.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think that at that point we'll be ready for like an alpha release. But yeah, I'm excited about that. Do we want to talk about kind of what we've done besides like where we're at with the internal release in terms of like API and server and all that?
Yeah. Do you want to just pick a couple like technical spots and then we'll dig into them?
Sure. The first one would be like how we eliminated the need for Phoenix channels on the client side.
Do you want to give a little bit of background as to why we went down this route?
Yeah. So, you know, our other goal is to release an API, and we have kind of two types of API. We have a GraphQL API, and we also have a real-time API that we serve over WebSockets. And you need that API to do most of the things in our application, because our application sends out tick events every second. Because the clients, all the clients do is really get the result of that API and paint that on the screen. Because we want to make our clients, you know, the Mac app, the iOS app, other apps that we plan on making, we want them to make them as dumb as possible. And all the kind of hard stuff being done on the server side, and then events getting pushed over this WebSocket API. Well, in the beginning, we were using Phoenix channels for that. And Phoenix channels are really nice. You can get them up and running. And what they do is they allow kind of this abstraction layer across a WebSocket where clients need to join certain channels to get events around that topic, quote-unquote topic. Mm-hmm. And there are clients, there are nice like JavaScript and Swift side clients that will kind of abstract this and make it easy for you to do. But if you look at just the API, what needs to happen for those channels to work, like there's special messages that get sent, like a PHX underscore join message gets sent across a WebSocket, and then you get a reply back. And these are all kind of special events. So if we're trying to create an API that goes out to the world, and we're trying to describe what you have to do for that API to connect and get messages and all this, and we have this complicated, like, you have to send this PHX underscore, blah, blah, blah. And people don't need to know that's built in Phoenix and Elixir and all that. Mm-hmm. So we want to simplify our API and just basically use a WebSocket, like WebSockets come out of the box and just send messages back and forth. And that's kind of what we strive to do. So in the beginning, we were using Phoenix channels, and then we kind of found a better way to implement those, an easier way to make the API make a little more sense.
Do you want me to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, we moved over to kind of going lower than Phoenix in Elixir land anyway. So we implemented a Cowboy WebSocket handler. And then from that point, we were able to just work with the WebSocket and the actual pattern matching is beautiful for WebSockets, right? We know exactly the shape of the message that's going to come in. If it doesn't match this, then go ahead and fail out and do something else. And that's worked really good for us to actually be able to describe exactly what we want every message that we receive and we send back out to the clients to look like. So we actually have full control over the API now. And interestingly, though, like there are things that Phoenix channels gave us that were really, really useful, like basically getting to group things together. So you can say client A, B, and C are all listening to events for the same workflow as we have them behind the scenes. And then, you know, that was really nice that we could broadcast on that channel and not everybody else would get it. So if we had, you know, 17 different people working on a timer at the same time, and three clients were connected to one, we didn't want to have to broadcast to all 17 of those. And it was really nice that we could actually utilize channels behind the scenes, even though we had a lower level API that we had exposed, and we can still use that subscription stuff. And it made the implementation of actually broadcasting the events to everybody who needs to know for anything within our workflows really succinct. I think it's like six lines of code or something. Like, it's beautiful how it actually all comes together behind the scenes. So even though we didn't like the public facing side of things when it came to working with channels, we really just wanted raw WebSockets. We still get to reap the benefits of all the work that went into that, which there's actually a lot of like really intense engineering that's gone into Phoenix channels. So I'm glad that we didn't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, there are some like reconnecting logic and stuff that happens with channels, which is really nice that we are going to probably have to re-implement the server side. So it's not perfect right now, but the API is so much nicer. It's like leaps and bounds nicer as far as like a client wanting to do stuff with our API. So that's one thing that we did. Is there anything else you want to talk about for that?
Not particularly.
And then the other thing that we kind of did is initially we just kind of had these timer events in our API. So working with one single timer, you wanted to start a 25-minute timer and then it would stop at the end. And that's kind of basically where our API stopped. And we knew we wanted to have these workflows that we were calling it, where it's basically a series of timers. So you can start your day up and say, hey, I want to do 12 Pomodoro-like sessions. So 25 minutes on, 5 minutes off is a break. And then every third one, there's a longer break. You know, that's just kind of your standard Pomodoro, but Beak wouldn't set these up just as however they want to work. So if they want to have like a deep work sessions where they have like 2 hour timers, stuff like that. And so we kind of replaced those timer events and timer API with a workflow like logic where it'll automatically go from one timer to the next timer to the next timer until it's done, and send you events along the way when this happens. So not only tick events, but like a workflow has completed, and then you get these various information about the current step that comes back. And then we also added the ability, not in our clients right now, but in the API, where you can start multiple types of Pomodoro sessions. So if you want to have a Pomodoro session and another type of session, you can do that. So that's kind of the other big change that we've made to our API.
Have we ever actually talked about workflows as a concept on the podcast? I kind of can't remember it.
I don't remember. It's been so long.
Yeah, I think we have, because I feel like when I originally got a proof of concept, the idea of a workflow, I swear we would have recorded things after that. Like, it wasn't after I was in this house. I remember doing it in the old apartment. But yeah, it was, I think, a really interesting adventure going into this, since we had originally just been like, what happens if we just unify our timers by running them on a server somewhere? And at that point, we had implemented our system timer module inside and managed to turn timers into processes that we could communicate in and out of. And then it's kind of like taking the MVP approach, right? Where you're like, if you want to have a working application at all times, you build it up over time. So it's like you start with a skateboard, and then you build a bicycle, and then you have a moped, and then going on from there, and how we were able to continually build on top of those things until we eventually got into what we have now with workflows, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So, those are kind of the two biggest things that we did in there. And those took a long, at least on the web client, it took a long time to kind of move over to the WebSocket. Well, it wasn't even that. On their client initially, we had two separate apps. We had one for the web and one for mobile, and we kind of merged those two. So that was kind of the biggest change that I made on the client side. And then switching over from the timer events to the web to the workflow events were actually relatively easy. It's just kind of the initial state that made a bit of an issue, but that would have happened even if we would have stuck with timer events. So
yeah, it would have never been a big difference there. Yeah, I think maybe next time we sit down to talk about stuff, we should talk about the adventure that was switching over from that like really crappy React Native app that I like threw together to just be like, I think I can get it on screen, to like when you're like, okay, we need this to be maintainable and we don't want to duplicate all this work. So moving it over to what we have now, being with the React Native web and really getting to leverage the work that you do at any given point and both sides pretty effectively is really nice. And I think it's a fun little thing to look into, because I would imagine most people don't really realize you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of silly, like redoing the same work for, you know, I'm building a timer face component over here and I have to build a timer face component over on the React Native side. And then we're thinking, well, let's just share the Redux type of stuff. So the state management and the global state of the application, like where's the timer at right now, who's currently logged in, all that kind of stuff, and how different components get their messaging from the WebSocket. We're thinking about just keeping that the same across both these apps. And with React Native Web, we're able to kind of combine those even more. And you can even have a component, the same component, but if your extension is .web or .native or .iOS, it will render down at build time for that given platform that you're on, that you're running against. So that's really nice.
It's pretty slick to see in action.
Cool. So that's kind of the state of where we're at. So I think this week we're going to be working on deployments. I'm going to be working on design a little bit. What are your goals this week?
Yeah, I'm going to be entirely focused on the deployment side of things. So that includes getting the whatever sort of continuous deployment stuff we have for the Mac app up and running. And while I'm doing that, I'll have to do a lot of the things that it'll take for us to distribute a iOS app anyway. So it's probably be like re-upping an Apple developer account and working on some of those things too. So do that. And then I need to patch up and probably upgrade some stuff in the backend. So for the actual server, probably upgrade to a newer version of Phoenix, assuming it's not going to break anything. I'm always the kind of masochist that likes to do those little upgrade tasks. And then I managed to use Delivery, which was, it's kind of a, or is it Delivery? Am I thinking the right thing? Distillery. There we go. To do our deployments on that, to build, because we have to build hot swapping modules, which gets a little bit weird inside of Elixir. And it's one of the things that people kind of tout as being really complicated, but the tooling has gotten a lot better and it's really not that bad. But when I had built ours, it was like 2 weeks before Distillery 2.0 was going to come out and improve a bunch of stuff and get rid of a lot of the things that I had already done. So yeah. I'm going to move us over to that. Those are kind of my goals.
Yeah, and we haven't really taken advantage of that hot swapping code yet. The goal would be, you know, we could deploy code whenever and nobody loses the state of their timers. So we do plan on implementing that. We're just not really taking advantage of it yet.
Oh, it's already done.
But I mean, if you deploy, all those processes go away, right?
No, they don't. No, that's the whole point. Like,
what happens if you're... if we have to make some change to state and things like that.
Ah, see, that's the thing. This is how, this should be a talk for a different time. We'll talk about how you can do hot code reloading, but you can manipulate that too.
Sure, you can do that. Right, you can, but we're just not doing that.
No, because we don't need to. The state inside the modules has not changed.
Right. But there's no, we don't have any architecture to kind of store that off into some stateful thing and then hydrate it back when the new code reloads and stuff like that.
Yeah. You don't need to. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
We don't need to yet, but there will be a time when we will need to do that. I'm predicting the future.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess we'll see what happens.
So we want to do something new this season and do kind of picks or like things that we found throughout the week or since the last recording of useful stuff, and we'll put links into the show notes. And the show notes are at standup.fm/whatever, somewhere over there.
Yeah, it's always the episode number. So this will be S3E1.
Right. So do you have a pick this week you want to?
So my pick for this week, because I'm a guy who likes entertainment a little bit too much, but I'm just going to go just play a game, like not a video game, play like a card game or something with somebody else. Just talk to people. It's really good for you, especially in the living in the Midwest. It really sucks to have the weather that we have a lot of times. Like it's a little bit, you know, makes you susceptible to getting a little bit depressed or whatever. So go to a game shop and grab a board game or start playing like a trading card game or something and just play with people, you know, let yourself have some fun.
Do you have like a specific game that you've been playing?
So I play the Pokemon trading card game, but that's really nerdy to admit to the wide open internet.
But you just
so.
I know. I didn't know. We just went back to the early 2000s.
Hey, right. It came out in 96. Okay.
Listen, I'm much older than you. So, cool. Yeah, so our picks don't have to be, you know, all business. They can be play. But I do have a business pick, and my pick is React Native Web. So we'll put that GitHub URL in the show notes. But that helped us a ton. So I want to give some shout out to helping people build apps for both native and the web within the same code base.
Yeah, that's so awesome. That is such a funny project because at first glance you go, what? React is already for the web. Why would I want to go to React Native and then go back? That sounds like a really bad idea, but that's just the naive look at it.
Yes. This does truly help you build kind of a write once type of application. A lot easier than React Native by itself can. So cool. So we'll see everybody in 2 weeks, man.
Sounds good.
All right. Talk to you later.
Later.